Everybody, this is Shelby with Hooks, Books, and Crime, and it is Craft and Story Time. I will be continuing my blanket, as well as there's a video in here of me creating this little demon that I love, which I fell miserably at, to be honest. The story I covered today is actually it's another good one that I feel like maybe I mean I can't follow up with every podcast, so maybe it does get. Like, maybe it does get mentioned a lot. The ones I listen to, I haven't seen it happen. So, let's grab our hooks or whatever you are crafting with. I messed up because I wasn't counting. I was just talking because that's smart. And we will get going. Of course, the pattern that I used will be linked in the notes as well as the yarn I'm using, which, I mean, it's just Big Twist. It's nothing fancy, but I just love Big Twist. So, go ahead and sit back, and of course, if this is something that you like, please like and subscribe, and, you know, send it to your friends. Here we go. It's nearly 2 a.m. on September 20th, 2017. In Everett, Washington. The air is brisk and the night is quiet. Sounds fucking beautiful. Especially if you see that scenery. Oh my god. Mwah. Lovely. But on this night, at this time, there is a knock on the door. I don't know about you, but I don't want anybody knocking on my door after like 8. A woman goes to the answer the door and she's ambushed. As she cracks the door just to peer through and see who it is, she's shot at 4 times. And as she falls to the ground, the shooter runs up to the door and shoots another 3 times, sealing her fate. And he just runs off into the night. Luckily, this woman is not home alone. Immediately after, there is a live-in nanny and she calls the police, who arrive pretty quickly, and the investigation begins. The first officer to arrive is unable to enter because of the woman's body is actually right up against the door. So this poor man actually has to push past her to even enter the scene. And as he takes in what's just happened, there's blood everywhere. Walls, the floor, the doorknob, everything is just bathed in blood. And if this isn't bad enough or just horrifying enough for this officer, he pans over and there's a toddler sitting on the couch looking right at him. This toddler had nothing shielding his view from what just happened to this woman, and he witnessed everything. And that's just so atrocious to me. This awful shooting and murder. In the eyes of pure innocence, he wakes up to this as it's happening. Just heartbreaking for this baby. No child really should see anything so horrifying in their life. During the investigation, they learn that the victim's name is Alicia Cadales McGuire, and that she was actually there to help the living nanny while her sister is out of town for work. She actually does not live here. She is only here to look after her sister's kids or help the nanny with her sister's kids. Also, there's no signs of sexual assault or robbery. It doesn't seem like this guy even tried to get in. He was already at the door when he was shooting her those last 3 shots. He could have easily forced his way in, but he had no interest. It seems like his job was done. He was there for what he needed to be there for, and then he was gone. But the question was rising. Who wanted to kill Alicia? Because this was clearly a targeted execution. But why her? So Alicia Canales McGuire is from Mount Vernon, Washington. She's actually one of 6 kids. She grew up on a family farm. So, hard work, good work ethic,
is kind of instilled in her at a young age, because if you've grown up on land, it's a lot of work, a lot of tending to, a lot of chores if you want it to stay nice and if you want it to do what you need it to do. You got to tend to it. I grew up on a ranch, and it would literally take my dad one day to mow the front yard, one day to mow the backyard, because it was just so much. Not to mention everybody having to help each other with each other's stuff. That way they could actually, have some of their weekend left over. So as she grew up, she actually, grows up, leaves home, and becomes a CNA, and she works in a skilled nursing facility. And from all accounts, really, she seems like she's just a lovely woman. Her residents, her staff, her family, everybody just adores her. She is lovely, she's wonderful, she's kind. And as it is, I feel like this speaks to her character enough. When she's not working, she still finds time and makes it a point to go back home to visit her parents to help them with the family farm. She goes there to help, to lend a handing, ugh, to lend a helping hand. Especially, your parents are getting older, they're slower, things aren't as easy to do, and you get tired quicker. I'm in my mid fucking 30s, I'm always tired. Couldn't imagine having a farm or being on the ranch anymore. Ugh. I'd be dead and very sunburned. Also, her nickname was Punky, which I think is fucking adorable. I'd really love to know the story as to how that came to be. I think it's such a cute nickname, Punky. And what's even sadder is at this time, the world is really just opening up for Alicia. She's recently married. She was actually married that July, just 2 months before her murder. And they were trying to have a baby. So during the investigation, they learn about her being a newlywed, and it's always the husband. So her new husband, Bradley McGuire, is immediately just boop, popped to the top of the list. They need to know where Bradley was, is, and was he a part of this? So Bradley's actually rolled out pretty quickly. He was actually working at the time of the murder, and there was no chance that he could have committed this murder. So because she had no enemies and the husband's out, officers are really stumped on this one. They have no idea now what could possibly cause this to happen. But Officer Art Wallen, who was the first officer to arrive on the scene, he knows something's off. He's actually been to this residence before. He's been here twice before because of the resident, which is Alicia's sister, Amanda Canales, and her estranged husband, Kevin Lewis. He's been there for two domestic violence calls that have been placed. So immediately Art Wallen, has a hunch that this is actually a case of mistaken identity to the worst degree. So Alicia's sister Amanda had actually recently left her husband Kevin Lewis and was living alone with her kids and the live-in nanny. They had been married for 8 years, but apparently the first red flag went up during their honeymoon. His controlling behavior began to surface, which really what that tells me is this man really made sure to hide who he truly was. And once he made her his at the altar, that's it. He gets to be who he wants to be. So he thought he picked the wrong one because she wasn't having it. He had assaulted her twice, and after that, she picked up her kids and she left. She got a protective order against him, got custody of her kids, and she began living her life as a single mother. And she did quite well, if I may say. It's a beautiful home. She's got a beautiful family, and she's working hard. Good for her. I always love hearing success stories of people who leave their abusers, both men and women. Nobody should be fucking hitting anybody. Keep your goddamn hands to yourself. So after she makes these moves, you know, the protective order, custody, Kevin Lewis just really ups up the threats and harassment. Because why wouldn't he, right? Little bitch. He starts threatening her and demands that he gets alimony and child support. And if he doesn't get it, he's gonna kill her. Like, what a very small man. I know there's men out there who get alimony. And you know what? I'm not judging. Because if a woman can get alimony, why not a man? You know? But if you're over here pitching a little fit and you know you're a piece of shit, you need to go back to your mother. Because obviously she tolerated that behavior. You can go with her. Nobody else has to deal with your shit. Anyway, sorry. Ugh, I hate that behavior in anybody. Nobody owes you anything. If you feel that way, go to your mother. So, and you know, unsurprisingly, he violates the protective order by showing up at the house and trying to get in. That is actually the first call. You know, he's peeking through the windows and shit. Little weirdo. Let it go. And then... sorry, I thought it stopped recording, but it didn't. I lost my place. So, actually, a few weeks before this murder, Amanda, you know, she gets home from work. And it's very dark where she lives. Before she's even out of the car, she is savagely attacked and beaten. I think it's even scary that this person just attacked her in the dark while she's home because she can't see anything. And, you know, once the attack is over, he's gone. And she knows deep down it was Kevin. But because it was so dark and she had blood dripping into her eye, she could not say for certain that it was him. So because she couldn't positively identify Kevin, they're unable to make an arrest. But Officer Wallen is already concerned by this man, and he seems to be, and the fact that he was already unfazed for the protection order, but he just got like a really bad feeling from him. And I think we've all had that where you meet someone or you see someone and there's just something in your gut that tells you like, mm-mm, something's off. Something's weird about them. And that's what he felt. So he definitely did not forget who this one was or who Kevin was. So since he's the one who responds to the address for the shooting, and it's determined that Alicia has no enemies and her husband has a solid alibi, he knows that the investigators need to talk to Kevin Lewis. When investigators get to Kevin Lewis's house that same evening, he's awake, which is weird. Why are you up so early? It's like in the middle of the night. I don't know. Unless you're like in your 20s partying, I feel like people don't have any business being up at like 3 or 4 in the morning. That's just me though, because I'm an old lady. So when investigators get to Kevin Lewis's house, oh, there, I was already there. But he doesn't seem very fazed or concerned about what just happened at his ex-wife's house. Which is, you know, weird considering his fucking kids are there. I think most of us would ask, are my kids okay? Is she okay? I'm not with my daughter's dad. If something were to happen to him, I'd be asking, is he all right? Because I'm not a fucking monster. His kids were in the house at the time of the shooting, and this asshole doesn't even ask about their well-being. A camera's actually located by that, a camera at a neighbor's house is located, and officers do see that Kevin Lewis is actually picked up at about 1:12 in the morning, but he arrives 20 minutes after that, which is actually 24 minutes before the 911 call. And they know that the 911 call occurred as soon as that person left. So it's not Kevin. He was actually home. So this revelation, you know, it rolls Kevin out as the shooter and brings officers back to square one. But they don't forget about who he is. You know, he's still on their radar, that's for sure. The thing is, like, they are really stumped. At one point, you know, they see that the ammunition that was used for the murder weapon is this very specific Russian brand that isn't too common for weapons. So they check local cells, and they do find somebody actually purchased that ammunition just before this murder. And it was at Walmart. We all know Walmart has cameras everywhere. You get a camera, you get a camera. Fucking cameras everywhere. So they check that surveillance. They find the video of the man buying it. They are able to get a receipt off the timestamp. They're able to get his information. And it's a dead end. This man has no relation to them whatsoever. And I believe he had an alibi also. So it becomes another dead end. Square one again, back to being stumped. And it stayed like this for a few weeks. But finally, a tip comes in. A woman called in to report that a girl was at a house party bragging that her and her boyfriend killed someone in Everett. You would think nobody's that fucking stupid, but lo and behold, there was one at least. And this girl was actually giving information that was not released to the public, because as it is, when this tip came in, the officers were a little skeptical of the authenticity of it until she started saying what the woman was saying, then those were details that hadn't been released. So obviously, you know, interest is piqued, which, you know, whoops, big mouth, like, my God, thank God for stupidity sometimes. I mean, really, way to go. So this becomes a very promising lead, and this dumb bitch is identified as Angelica. And I'm sorry if you're offended by me calling her a bitch, but I don't fucking care. She was part of this. I mean, that's the, like, honestly, like, one of the nicest things somebody could say about her at this point. So she's identified as Angelica. And with nothing else to go on, detectives use social media to try to find this Angelica. And, you know, maybe find out who her boyfriend is. So they do some sleuthing. They actually do find out who this girl is. And Angelica is just an alias. Apparently she has numerous aliases, which... why? You're not that important. I highly doubt she was. But her name is Alexis Hale. And her boyfriend's name is Jaredon Phelps, who is Kevin Lewis's cousin. So along with this connection, they find that fucking Alexis, gotta give it to her, they find on her social media a picture of her posing with the murder weapon. Because she's a gangsta. She's hard. And then, as they're digging deeper, I'm sorry, I'm laughing because it's like, come on. It's like literally like a comedy movie. Why would you do these things? Oh, or you know what? For you murderers, keep it up. So anyway, they find on her Snapchat, she posts where they're fanning out cash. Which is like, okay, suspish. And if that isn't bad enough, there's also a clip of them driving and the, you know, she's showing the highway signs to show the route that they're on. Like, literally giving the place and like, oh, whatever it, basically. You fucking idiot. I'm sorry. I shouldn't laugh. This is a terrible story, but I just love the way that they figured out, like, what happened. So her posting this actually gives the officers, or the detectives really, the ability to ping her phone and to see what time they're there at and what area, where they went, where they came from. And like I said, psst, they went to Everett. So this evidence gave them enough information to pull them in for questioning. Alexis holds strong, but when they mention to Jaredon that they killed the wrong woman, his reaction to this, like, you know, all the walls come down. And he almost incriminates himself. He's like, oh, I didn't realize. And then he stops. He's like, crap. But yep, dude, jigs up.
So Jaredon just starts to see, you know, the writing on the wall. Jigs up. And he starts talking. He sings like a canary. I mean, he gets to the point where he actually gets in a squad car and goes like with them step by step as to what happened that night. So this is the story according to Jaredon. According to Jaredon, that night, him and Alexis went to pick up Kevin so Kevin could go withdraw the money that he was going to pay them. Afterwards, they dropped Kevin off, which is corroborated by the neighbor's camera. Sorry about that. And then they take off to Amanda's house. Now, Alexis has this idea, not even an idea, she knows as a woman herself that Amanda will be more Amanda will be more inclined to answer the door if it's a woman than if it's a man, because it's so late at night and, you know, it's like I said, it's dark in that neighborhood. So she decides that she is going to go ahead and knock, have Jared and hide behind the garage, because it's like the garage is here, front door's here, so he's in this corner right here. So all he has to do is go boop, boop. And then, so she knocks, Jared's hiding, and you know, unfortunately, this bitch was right. She knew exactly what she was doing. She knocks, only Amanda's not the one who answers the door, it's Alicia. Alicia comes to the front door and answers, and just barely as she, you know, puts her eye through, cracks the door open a bit just to see who's out there, Jaredyn seizes his moment. He turns around the corner and he fires 4 times. And then he runs up to the door, fires another 3 times, and they're gone. And, you know, after that, Alicia unfortunately passes away pretty suddenly. Police arrive quickly, though. And once Alexis hears that Jaredyn is already talking, she goes ahead and confesses as well. So they both actually plead guilty for first degree murder. Jaredyn is sentenced to 31 years. Alexis gets 15 because she's not the one who fired, but she is a participant. So I think 15 is a good amount of years. I think she's only like 19 years old. Yeah, she's 19. So 15 years, that's a good chunk of your life when you're 19. I hope you grow up in those 19 years, because my God, what is wrong with you? You too, Jaredyn. Good grief. And then Kevin Lewis is immediately arrested also once this comes up. He's arrested and he is actually charged and found guilty of aggravated murder, and he's sentenced to life without parole. I don't know about the parole, I'm sorry. He's sentenced to life though, which means this man will not have any opportunities, hopefully for a very long time, if at all, to ever hit another woman. And hopefully there's someone in prison who just, you know, maybe beat the shit out of him. And if not, he's going to be there a while. So have at him, people. And that is the story of the misidentification of Alicia Canales McGuire. And I mean, this story is just, it's really sad for her family. I think more sad than usual, considering the fact she died in place of her sister. That's, you know, there's no easy way to say it. There's no simpler way to put it. She died instead of her sister. And I feel like that's such a hard pill to swallow that I don't think you can swallow it or you can process it for a while. I am hoping that Amanda went and got counseling after this, because how do you go on from that? How does the family continue? Her poor husband, you know, their life was barely beginning. The kids are traumatized. It's a very ugly thing to come back from, unfortunately. But I do want to say, on behalf of my crocheting, I don't know if you saw it in the video, he came out pretty horrible. That's Lucy from Disenchantment. I fucking love that show. And I love that little demon. He's hilarious. But let me get him for you. Well, also, I forgot to bring him up, so that's from the first episode. He's adorable. But it's because I followed the recommendations of Hook Size, which for some reason I neglected with Lucy. So, big surprise here. He came out like a rubber chicken. I still love him. He's a little wonky-eyed, but that's okay. And I don't know how the tail came out super long. What is this? And this is of no fault of the pattern creator. I mean, it's really not. You would think because I chose to use a less thick yarn, I would know to switch down my hook, but I did not. I literally just came to that realization today, maybe about an hour ago. I was like, oh, that's why the holes are there. So he's my goofy little demon. I love him. But yeah, so thank you for joining me. I know I'm not doing a lot of crocheting here, but one, it's my second episode and I'm nervous still. Two, I just realized I did double crochets and half double crochets, so that's why I keep starting over, because I'm like alternating them when it's literally straight double crochets. I don't know what I'm doing. I need to go to sleep. That's really what needs to happen. But I hope y'all enjoyed this. It's a work in progress, but I know I've always wanted to have like a craft circle vibe. I just don't have the time for it, nor do I know the people for it. So I'm hoping some people find some comfort in this too. Again, my name is Shelby, and this is Hooks, Books, and Crime, and I'll catch you on the next one.